What if I told you there was a way to solve your biggest practice challenges and connect with a thriving community all in one place? Well, the wait is over. The Best Practices Association app is here. Now available on the Apple Store and Google Play Store, this app is a way to get solutions in the palm of your hands. And the best part? It's 100% free to join. So don't wait. Download the Best Practices Association app now and start transforming the way you practice dentistry. Yo, yo, yo. Hey, guys, welcome back to another amazing edition of the Best Practices Show podcast. Did you know harassment in dentistry takes different shapes? A lot of times we fall into this one category, but there's actually multiple categories of harassment. And there's tons you can do in advance to prevent it from happening. And a lot of dentists don't know what to do when a claim comes up. So I thought we would bring in our friend, Alan Twigg, to talk about this difficult subject, harassment in dentistry, and what you really need to know about it. Here it is. So please listen up. I hope you guys enjoy it, and we'll see you soon. Hey guys, welcome back to the Best Practices Show podcast. I have the coolest job in the world. You know why? Because I love dentistry and I get to find the coolest people who are experts, influencers, thought leaders in dentistry that know a lot of stuff to help you improve your practice and your life. And we're going to do exactly that today with a recurring guest, dear friend of ours and trusted partner, Alan Twigg from Bent Erickson. And one of the things that comes up is harassment. We don't even like the word, but let's talk about what that means. And as an employer, it's something you have to be very well educated about. And I thought Alan's the best person to do that. So Alan, thanks for being back, brother. Appreciate you.
Yeah, thanks, Kirk. Happy to be back. And not a fun topic to talk about, but an important one, you know, and one of these things in HR that if you got your bases covered and you have just a little bit of investment, you can save yourself a lot of headache down the road.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I always want to start here. You've been a regular guest, but if somebody's listened to the podcast and they haven't heard you before, I need them to know who you are so they can answer the question like, why is Alan an expert on this? What do you do, Alan?
Yeah, so I am president of Bent Erickson & Associates. So we are an HR compliance and HR management firm. We predominantly serve dental practices all throughout the whole country. And we help with all the rules and laws and regulations that are out there for state and federal rules. And then we also cover and help with all the life circumstances come up with employees. How do you handle this? How do you handle that? What do I do in this case? Because, of course, there's no training on any of this stuff in dental school. And so our company has been around for over 45 years. And this whole world of HR is all that we do, and helping people out with whatever they're dealing with. So that's us in a nutshell.
Yeah, and I'm just going to say this. If you're listening, Bent Erickson is one of the best investments you'll ever make as a dentist because they help you with all of this stuff. You don't have to figure it out. State by state, they know the rules. This is a tough topic and something you probably shouldn't navigate yourself. And so if you're interested, you can reach out to Alan. They are amazing. Now, let's go super high level. The word harassment is not a fun word to talk about. But a lot of times, you were mentioning this before we hit the go button, dentists think it's only one thing. Let's start super high level. Why is this an important topic? And help us understand the complexity of it.
Sure. So I think that one of the biggest mistakes folks have is kind of a narrow mindset or a narrow definition of harassment. So oftentimes people think, well, harassment is just one thing, and that's a male employee, you know, who's constantly hitting on a female employee, and that's what harassment is, end of story. And of course, the reality is there are so many different types. There could be male on female, female on male. There could be female on female, male on male. There could be multiple employees harassing one person. There could be multiple employees harassing multiple employees. There could be the UPS driver hitting on somebody or harassing someone. There could be an equipment person who is coming in and doing something inappropriate. So it's really important that we really expand our minds and expand our definition of what harassment is. And it's not just sexual harassment. It's not just a particular thing in our mind. So that's one thing. Another big thing folks need to be aware of is that there are some individual states that have individual harassment rules, individual harassment protections, requirements, and so on. So I'll give you a list here real quick. If you are in Connecticut, Illinois, Massachusetts, Maine, Rhode Island, Vermont, California, of course, DC, Oregon, New York, or Colorado, those are all states that have specific state-based harassment rules. In most cases, it's a requirement about training. In other cases, it's other requirements, particular language that has to be in a policy. So there's information about that on our website. You don't even have to be a Ben Erickson client. This is just free information. It's in a part of our website called the Resource Library and Compliance Alert. So if folks want to check that out and you're in one of those states, take a look. And the last thing I'll say is, even if you're not in one of those states, just know that you still have harassment requirements. And we'll talk more later about what to do if you have a claim of harassment. But no matter what state you're in, this is still an important topic and there are still important steps to be done.
Yeah. And so thanks for opening up our mind as far as there's multiple types of harassment. But let's go to prevention first, like as a practice owner. And that's what's cool about this show. And especially what you do is like starting with like, let's do it the right way and prevent this in the first place. But if I'm a dentist listening, what do I do for prevention?
Yeah. So one of the biggest things is you need to have a policy. And this would be in your employee handbook or your policy manual. So, of course, if you don't have a policy manual or an employee handbook, you need to get one of those. And the harassment policy needs to be really good and really comprehensive. And it needs to get, at the very beginning, real clear about some of the different types and examples of harassment. So, for example, there is what's called quid pro quo harassment. And that's where someone is basically saying, hey, look, if you give me this, I will give you that. And that could be sexual favors. That could be, hey, I'll give you a raise if you do something for me. So that's quid pro quo. Another really common one would be hostile work environment. And that's where, in a sense, that is could be just doing any sort of things physically, verbally, non-verbally that is all about making someone feel uncomfortable, feel like their workplace is adversely affected. This could be about all the protected things that we normally think of, like race, color, religion, national origin, sexual orientation. It could even just be something that has the purpose or effect of unreasonably interfering with somebody's work performance. So again, it may not be something as overt as hitting on someone or actually bumping into someone, walking down the hallway, but just something that truly really does have a negative effect on somebody's ability to just do their job. So that's one big part of it. When the courts or lawyers or state labor boards get involved in this, one of the big things that they want to see is that you have a policy about right. harassment and that you have made it crystal clear to your employees that this is what harassment is. We don't tolerate it. If you do it, you will be subject to disciplinary action up to and including termination, that all of that is in there, and that you also have not just kind of buried this in your policy manual, but that you've actually talked about it. So maybe when you hire a new person, you make sure that you sit down with them and say, hey, you got to read all of this policy manual. And I really want to emphasize this harassment policy because at our practice, we take this really seriously, zero tolerance, et cetera. And then this idea of training, those states I mentioned earlier, most of them have a training requirement. That training requirement can be for supervisors or managers. It can also be for non-managers. So you need to make sure that you're adhering to all of that. And then the kind of the next phase to this, once you've kind of done those basic things, is how do you actually handle a claim? And so that would be the next thing that we want to talk about, if that all makes sense so far.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense. Now, it's interesting you said that, because I have a couple friends and they work in other industries and they're like, we're doing harassment training. I'm like, you have to do that? And then they would say, we are required to do that. In industries, I would think you don't have to do that. This is such a big issue that what you said is absolutely true. We need documentation. There's got to be a discussion. And if you're a dentist or a business owner, you know, like, first of all, putting a policy manual together is a difficult thing in itself. Secondly, getting people to read it is extraordinarily difficult. Thirdly, having them understand it. And you mentioned in the last podcast, like, having them sign off, say, I have read this, I understand this. And so that's a piece of it. So as a business owner, just check these boxes. It's really important. And if you struggle with doing it, that's why I would just call Alan and say, listen, can you help me get this done? And I think it is crazy important now more than ever, because people like to interpret things how they like to interpret them. Like, you have training on it once a year, whether you're required to or not. We're going to have a discussion about it and keep the bar high. I think it's also important too. We talk about core values a lot. You've got to be able to set the ethical standards for how people behave in this environment so that this really doesn't become an issue. It doesn't fix it alone, but I think it's important to have this clarity around it.
Definitely.
Yeah, I'd love
yeah,
to talk.
And
go ahead.
And I'll just chime in too and just say that here's one idea for folks to consider. So maybe you, at one of your morning huddles or maybe at a team meeting, let's say it's once a month, maybe you just pick a policy out of your policy manual, and that month you're emphasizing that policy. It could be the harassment one. It could be the policy about cell phone usage. It could be a policy around mission, vision, values, philosophy. It could be just something about your systems and procedures that you want to emphasize. And so if you build that into your just every day or every month kind of deal, then it's just part of your pattern. And so then when you bring up and remind folks about the harassment policy, it's not weird. It's just, yeah, this is just what we do.
Right. So let's talk about the difficult stuff that's to talk about. When something happens, there's an incident. Now, prior to, maybe we could talk about this too. And if you're a dentist listening, you've either had a friend or it's happened to you. An incident happens, and prior to the claim being filed, there's probably something you should consider, like, in there, right? Or not? Or are we gonna, like, you guide the conversation. I'm just asking questions here.
Sure, sure.
All right, guide us down.
So, in terms of handling it, so number one, if you're making kind of a list, so number one would be having that policy we talked about earlier. Number two would be doing the training or the reminders or something to that effect. And then, so number three is real important. This one is often missed if someone has written the policy manual themselves or if it's not been reviewed by a professional. And that is that the policy needs to specify who the person goes to if they feel they've been the victim of harassment. So you can't just have an open-ended thing that says, oh, if you feel like you're a victim, then tell someone. It needs to be tell this person or tell the doctor or the manager. You know, it needs to be a specific person, because otherwise one employee may go to another employee, or it's like, where am I supposed to go with this? And especially for larger practices, you know, what this does is it basically confuses the employees and it makes the process drag on. So instead of us getting this resolved quickly, we're burning precious time while someone is trying to figure out just who to even report this to or who can actually handle it. So that's one big thing, is who exactly is the contact person or contact persons. The next step, number four, is that you, as the manager or the dentist, you have to make this a priority. I can't tell you how many times we get a call and someone will say, hey, you know, my friend desk person just said that she's getting harassed by the UPS driver and she feels uncomfortable working, but I'm leaving on vacation next week and I'm gone for a couple weeks and, you know, the practice is going to stay open. So can I just deal with this in like 3 weeks when I get back? No, you can't do that. That's not making this a priority. Because if you think about it from the standpoint of this person being in a potentially unsafe situation, and the message that you're sending by saying, oh, yeah, I'll get to that later, I'll get to that later, I'll get to that later, you're not making this person a priority, and you're in a sense complicit in an unsafe situation. So you got to make it a priority. That means you need to do the next step, which is your investigation. And that is doing an impartial investigation where you are sitting down with the person who reported it and getting a very detailed summary, who, what, when, and where, and how. You're sitting down with the other person who is the alleged perpetrator, again, who, what, when, and where. And you potentially may be sitting down with other employees and saying, hey, have you ever experienced this? Did anyone witness this? So you're gathering all of this information, and that's what the investigation is basically a big, in a sense, a big discovery process for you as the manager, the owner, to gather all of this evidence, if you will. And then the last step in it, which would seem obvious, surprisingly enough, this one a lot of folks don't do, and that is making a final decision or coming to a resolution where you are actually deciding something and taking action. We hear this one all the time, where someone will gather all this evidence, and then it's usually one of two reasons why they don't take action. One reason would be that the alleged accused or perpetrator person is a real high-level person. Maybe it's an associate dentist. Maybe it's a hygienist that really produces a lot. Maybe it's the office manager who is real integral to the practice operations. And the dentist kind of goes, oh, geez, like it would be a real big deal if I had to just suddenly fire that person right now. And so they kind of try to, like, make peace or sweep it under the rug or go back to the person and say, yeah, I know they did that to you a whole bunch of times, but they said they're not going to do it anymore. So are we cool? And they kind of just, like, don't make a decision with it. The other reason folks don't often make a decision or take action is that it's just a he said, she said kind of thing, or a she said, she said, or one of these things where they just kind of go, I don't feel like I have actual proof. Nobody witnessed this. It was in a hallway and no one else was around. Nobody heard it. And so it's just one person's word against the other, and they kind of feel this, like, paralyzed thing. But that final decision is really important. There have been a number of cases where a dentist or an employer makes the final decision. The employee or somebody kind of appeals this to the state labor board. State labor board comes in, they do their own big investigation. And in some cases, the state labor board may find a different conclusion than what the dentist did. They may say, oh, well, we think you actually should have done this instead of that. And in a lot of those cases, the dentist does not get in trouble, or the employer does not get in trouble. And the reason they don't get in trouble is because they did all of these steps. They had the policy, they did the training, they did a really good faith investigation. They came to a decision. And even though the state labor board disagrees with that decision, the fact that they did all the steps, they did it in good faith, they don't, in a sense, get penalized for that. Now, where people do get in trouble is when they don't do the steps. They don't have a policy, or they don't make it a priority, or they just try to sweep it under the rug and not make a final decision. That's where people do get in trouble or have to then lead to some sort of out-of-court settlement or something like that. So those are the main steps.
What else do dentists get wrong about this whole concept? I always enjoy talking to you because I think you have one of the hardest jobs ever because it's so, I don't even know where to start. It's so specific to each state, and most of these are big challenges, but some of the questions that you get are other things. What are some of the things that people really get wrong about this?
Well, one of them is, yeah, it's just doing a real thorough investigation, talking to lots of people as opposed to, just talking to one person and that's it. Let's see. Another thing would be, shoot, I just had that up the tip of my tongue. It is important to take that final step, even if it is termination, and even if it is termination of a high-level person, because you need to have your employees back. You need to show them that what's written in the manual that says, we take this seriously, and this is a zero tolerance thing. You need to really show them that you're willing
Right.
to walk the walk with it. So that's a big part of it. What else? I don't know. Keep asking me more questions. I'll remember what I was going to
Yeah, and then
say.
I don't know. I don't even know what to ask because this is such a big thing. I think the theme that keeps coming up is like documenting it, setting a standard, following a list, a protocol. And then from a leadership standpoint, like we talk about this all the time, like you have to coach yourself as a leader, not only for your standards, but for everybody else that leads and everybody else, even if it's inappropriate conversation and it doesn't even fall into harassment. I think that's one of the things you have to do as a leader, say, come on, it's fringing out of bounds, but I have no tolerance for that. And we have a set of values here and I want to keep us all on the straight and narrow. So I think,
Yeah,
you know,
I remembered what I was going to say.
please go there.
So it's a common thing that people accidentally mess up, and this is not because people are bad or trying to do anything nefarious. So let's say it's your front office employee, and she says, "I'm being harassed by the UPS driver," and it's one of these things where maybe the UPS driver comes in every day or every other day, so it's a frequent thing. One common mistake would be saying, oh, okay, you're feeling harassed by the UPS driver. What I'll do is I'll just take you off the schedule for a couple weeks. So we'll just have you just go home and I'll sort this out and you come back in a couple weeks once we've got a different UPS delivery driver or something like that. That is, in a way, retaliation against the person who reported being harassed, because you're essentially, now if you're taking them off the schedule and you're not paying them, you're basically financially punishing them for reporting harassment. So it's kind of like, in a sense, punishing the victim. So that's an example of something. There are other ways that you could do something like that. You know, if it's two employees who work together and you think, oh, okay, I'll cut one person's hours so they're not working together, or I'll schedule them on different days and now they're making less money because they're not working the same. You know, that's one of those examples where you're trying to be nice and you're trying to come up with a temporary solution while you figure everything out, but you end up, in a sense, in a retaliation situation because it looks like you're punishing the victim.
Right.
So that's one area.
So well said, buddy. And again, I just appreciate you being on discussing these concepts. Some of these aren't fun to talk about, but they're very real and they happen. So I do.
Yeah, and I'll
Oh, go ahead.
and I'll let me say one other thing too about the final decision. So in a situation where you don't have just really rock solid evidence. I mean, sometimes you do the investigation and you've got multiple employees who are all saying, oh, yeah, I always feel uncomfortable around so and so. They're always making, lewd comments and hitting on or whatever. You know, sometimes it's really, really obvious. In those times when it's not as obvious and you're kind of right on that fence and you're like, well, is it, do I go this way? Do I go that way? Just know that, in these cases, you do not need some overwhelming quantity of evidence. If you just kind of go, if your gut is saying, yeah, I kind of get a skeezy vibe off of that person too, or yeah, a couple months ago we had that patient that kind of said they were a little uncomfortable around so and so, you just need that little bit of feather, that little bit of evidence. You obviously want to document and say, okay, this is why I'm making this decision, because I also share this thing, or there was this report or something. You want to document it. But again, it just takes that little bit, and you can make a decision based on that little bit. It's not like Law and Order, where you have to have some mountain of evidence beyond a reasonable doubt. We're not talking a criminal thing here. So just know that, if you're on that fence and it's that, he said, she said, you don't have a mountain of evidence, that's fine. You can still make a decision with what you have.
Yeah, buddy, we're so grateful for you. I know people that are listening to this are going to want to know more about how do I get in touch with you? How do you help me with some of these things? But before we do me a favor, just give us some final thoughts on this concept of harassment.
Yeah, I mean, the thing I would just share is, you know, we're still in a tight labor market in dental. You know, good employees especially are hard to come by. And the last thing that we want to do in a case like this is not walk our walk and basically not do right by our team. And so in a case like this, where you're in a tough situation, you may have to let someone go. You may have to let someone go who is an associate or a manager or something like that. You just want to, you know, you need to choose the lesser of two evils. And even though letting a team member go may seem like the worst case, the real worst case is that you send a message to your team that says, I'm willing to allow bad behavior, or I don't actually have your back when it comes to, you know, making a hard decision. And then you're at risk of not only losing the employee who reported the harassment, you may lose other team members as well. And then it's like this kind of domino effect where you're going to be left with the employees who, you know, don't share your, or in a sense, share these values that say, I don't care about you, or I'm not really here to have your back. And that's incredibly toxic. So just keep that in mind, that these hard decisions are hard and you gotta do right by your team.
Yeah. So well said. So if I'm listening to this, how do I find out more about what you do? Where do I go?
Yeah, so folks can learn about us at our website. It's benerickson.com. People can reach out to me directly. But yeah, you know, benerickson.com, there's information on what we do. Our main service that we do with clients is called the HR Director Package. It's got everything you need to get into compliance, stay in compliance, and without a whole bunch of extra stuff that you don't actually need. So it's a really nice package that keeps you in compliance, gives you all the tools and resources to handle all the life circumstances that are thrown your way. And we are always a phone call or an email away. Our team is standing by to answer questions and help you out. So that's who we are.
And so just to be clear, if we're not compliant as a business owner, you get us compliant and then you have a maintenance program and support. If I can just call you and go, hey, I have a question, you also include that in your services.
Yep, absolutely. On an ongoing basis, we keep everything up to date. Yeah. So if anything changes for your state, federally, or even if you're growing, your employee number changes, policies adjust based on that. And then, yeah, anytime you got a question, you just pick up the phone, send us an email, and we're right there. And that support end of what we do is a huge part of what we do. And we can get back to people very quickly, usually the same day, if not the same day, the next day at the latest. And yeah. It's really nice because when you're in those tough situations, harassment, terminating someone, pregnancy, difficult employee, wage and hour questions, whatever it is, you can't wait 3 or 4 days to get a response. And we are right there whenever you need us.
Yeah, I'm so grateful for everybody. I say this all the time, but Ben Erickson it's a no-brainer. Like, you have to do this. And I highly encourage you, if you own your own practice, let somebody else help you with all of this stuff. So, brother, thanks for being on. I'm going to have you back again and again and again to highlight these challenges, which are often not fun to talk about on the podcast. So stick around while we say goodbye to everybody else. But thank you guys for listening to the Best Practices Show podcast. Hope you enjoy. That's not a fun subject, but our job, as always, is to bring you great information so that you continuously create a better practice and a better life. And we're going to keep doing that. So until you hear from us next time or you see us next time, keep watching or keep listening to the Best Practices Show. You guys enjoy your day. So there you have it. Another great episode. Hope you guys enjoyed it. And thank you for showing up. I just want to thank you for being here and sharing the good word with your friends. And if you're really enjoying the podcast, could you do me a favor? Could you go to wherever you consume the podcast and just give us a 4 or 5 star review? Here's what that does. It allows us to find other great people like you. I love this profession so much. I'm going to spend the rest of my professional life finding great information so that you can consume it and your friends can consume it so that you can create a better practice and a better life. So keep spreading the word and we will see you guys soon. Have a great day, everybody.